put it on your special. Just great. Good. We will. She's the non-reserve. And here comes the others.
Good morning and welcome to the Philadelphia Lodge. This is a very chilly, chilly morning. Here at the Philadelphia Lodge, we try our best as students to spread broadcast the teachings of the philosophy of theosophy. And we meet here on a regular basis, twice a week. And we just, this last Friday, we had one of our Friday meetings. It's our once a month. And the subject matter that they had was the Buddha's Dhammapada. Coming up in February, this will be a very interesting one too, is Sankarshara's The Crest Jewel of Wisdom. That will be on the 18th. It's always the third Friday of the month. And those meetings are from 7 till 8, and the doors open at 6:30. That is our comparative religion study, which is different than the study that we have during the week on Wednesday. If one wishes to be a student of this philosophy, we have to be able to understand all religions and all philosophies if we can get a bit of it to understand, to know what the comparison is, what from the ancients we might have in today's theosophy, because the theosophy and the philosophy of theosophy is just part, just a very small part of the ancient wisdom religion. So on Wednesday evenings, we meet from 7:45 to 9 p.m., and we have our study class in Mr. Judge's The Ocean of Theosophy. And this coming Wednesday, we will be starting on reincarnation, and the area that we're studying in for that chapter is heredity as proof. Also on Wednesday evenings, we have a reference library that is open at 5:30, and it's open almost up to the time when we have our evening classes, so it would be like from 5:30 to 7:30. There's always a student in there to help you, and also for those of us who do not have all the books at home, one can come in and check out what the class is for the night, and also the reference that was been given would be also be in there. And then, of course, we come to Sundays. We start at 11 and we're over promptly at 12 noon. Doors open at 10:30. Doors open at 10:30. We opened a little earlier today because it was really cold out there. That's usually a form, a panel discussion, or a talk. And the subject matter for today's is realizing the higher self. Our programs run in 3 months sections. These are what we do for January, February, and March. And under January, the over umbrella, shall we say, of all the talks that will be happening is the path of spiritual evolution. So next Sunday, we will have what is the true service of humanity? All the work done here or anywhere else throughout the lodge. It is that basic aim and purpose and teaching. And for each one, we can understand as we start studying the depth of man. There's so many veils that are underneath. Everyone is welcome to attend these. Anyone that has any questions or thoughts that are different than they've had during the past, they might find these ideas that are expressed in the philosophy well taken. So it is that for the basis, and that it's open free to the public. There is no charge. It's, in a way, we could call it a school of philosophy. It's a school of life. A school of mankind. Anyone who wishes to give of themselves to be a help to humanity is always welcomed. And as it states on the back of the bulletin, there is a declaration that is put out in a few simple paragraphs that express exactly what a United Lodge of Theosophists represents. So we wish that anyone that's interested to attending these pick up the pamphlet or the bulletin, because it also has listed all the subject matters that we'll be coming up with. So as we said, today we are looking at the idea of realizing the higher self. We will have a short talk given on this, and then we will have a time period for questions, answers, and comments.
First Corinthians 3:16. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? This is an introduction to the self beyond the common self, the day-to-day self, the all-too-familiar self. Our days and sometimes lives are spent satisfying the needs and wants of the common self. Food, clothing, shelter, protecting it from pain and opening avenues to pleasure. So busy are we attending to this common self that we don't hear the message in the silence from our higher self. Although the existence of man's higher self may be met with doubt and even scorn in some quarters, great minds, both ancient and modern, have taught, and theosophy verifies, that man is a composite being consisting of seven distinct principles, transitory and perishable, that include the body, the vitality, the astral body, and the animal soul. Study of these parts is worthy of our attention and will reward all research. But what we're concerned with this morning is the higher trio, that which is addressed as the indwelling spirit in the Bhagavad Gita and listed as human soul, spiritual soul, and spirit. And it's commonly referred to in these rooms in Sanskrit terms, which are Manas, Buddhi, and Atma. It's that part of ourselves that seems to escape our realization. There are many inspirational documents that offer instruction and encouragement in the quest of realizing the higher self that we reside in. The common theme that they share is that through knowledge, desire, and will, we can gain control and mastery over the lower instincts and exalt and realize our higher self. Complete submission to the indwelling spirit spoken of in the Bhagavad Gita delivers us from the tyranny of the animal nature that now dominates and motivates our lives. As an example, the instinct of fight or flight is common and persistent throughout the animal world, even in the microscopic realm. However, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus instructs his disciples, saying, "But I say unto you that you resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite you on your right cheek, turn to him also the other." These instructions are given to his disciples who are on the path and desire to become purified, enlightened, those who desire spiritual excellence. Perhaps this is why these teachings seem so foreign to most of us and so impractical. In our day-to-day world of competition and an almost necessary selfishness, there's little place for such a command. However, the idea has factual authority because we find the same idea expressed in the quote in this quote by the Chinese sage Lao Tzu. Treat those who are good with goodness, and also treat those who are not good with goodness. Thus, goodness is attained. Be honest to those who are honest, and be also honest to those who are not honest. Thus, honesty is attained. Both of these enlightened beings, and many more who are too numerous to mention, encourage us to respond to life not with our animal instincts or lower common selves, but to rely on that higher self, the God-like self, who is beyond fear, who acts without covetousness, selfishness, or pride, deeming himself neither actor nor possessor. The Bhagavad Gita describes such a person, saying, "This O son of Pritha, is dependence upon the Supreme Spirit, and he who possesses it goeth no more astray. Of course, the best teachers in the world cannot achieve for you what you should accomplish for yourself. They can offer advice and suggestions and live exemplary lives, but it's up to the student disciple to put the advice and suggestions into action. Theosophy tells us that our true nature is divine and that we are in the process of evolving towards perfection. With this knowledge, perhaps we should think of ourselves as gods in training and not as helpless sinners. If we face life thinking of ourselves as sinners, we will make of ourselves better sinners. But if we face life as potential gods, we will come face to face with that God who dwells within. Krishna gives a description to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita of such a one. Fearless, sincere, generous, self-restrained, pious and studious, harmless and free from anger, resigned, not speaking of the faults of others, having universal compassion, patience, power, fortitude, and purity. Discreet, dignified, does not seek revenge, free from conceit. These are some of the marks of him whose virtues are of a godlike character, O son of Bharata. We'll close with another quote from Lao Tzu. At the center of your being, you have the answer. You know who you are, and you know what you want.
Thank you. So we think that should have given us some hints about the journey, because there's many, many attributes that we need to bring into our working life to understand that we are this true higher self, but we have layered it for many lifetimes with things that the eye sees, the outer eye, and our wants have been for some sort of gratification. And we figure if we all can think how long it took us to develop a habit, whether it be good or bad, think how many lives we have lived and have lost the true knowledge of what we truly are. We can all honestly say we don't really know that part of our nature on a 24/7 basis. Yes.
The higher self has been defined as the God within, and that we are potentially gods. If the higher self is present in all beings, those within the human kingdom, below it and above it, are those beings in the lower kingdoms we call animals, vegetables, minerals, are they also gods in potential?
In the long stretch, we could say, because let's look at the idea of consciousness and units of consciousness. The lower kingdoms, in their way, live closer to what we should be doing than we as human beings are. Because that same spark, that spirit spark, is in everything and everywhere. So again, as human beings, we have the great responsibility of the ability of having choice. The lower kingdoms, whether it be animal, vegetable, or mineral, grow in their development of consciousness automatically in degrees. When self-consciousness looks at something, which we are mind beings, thinkers, who have evolved and have taken on this physical vehicle to be able to understand and express this nature, we have that power, as we stated, that power of choice. And it's by our choosing that we have developed as we are today. And also, it's by our choosing whether we push back the lower consciousness in the lower kingdoms on their part of development, of working up to self-consciousness. As we say, the units of consciousness is maybe the easiest way to look at the intelligence that is in those lower kingdoms. Yes?
We're thinking about the bee, the honeybee, mm-hmm. and how that intelligence is expressed in perfect geometrical shapes in the honeycomb, and how the group works as a unit, each with their duty to fulfill in regular cycles. And there's no, I'm not going to work today. There's getting up, doing the job, returning to the hive, and so forth. And we were thinking, looking at these apartment buildings out that window, here's our honeycomb. Mm. And we've all got our little units, and yet we don't even say hello or recognize our neighbors most of the time. So in a sense, that kingdom, working by instinct, is doing better than we are. And we have the choice at every moment to realize we are a kingdom of human beings, all with purpose, all working through cycles, and we can help one another.
Yes, we can. And it's funny, for most of us, to our direct family, yes. To our close friends, yes. But as we're walking down the street, how often do we look up, look at someone and say, good morning, or how are you? Nice day. It's almost like we're walking down inside a tank. We have all these outer protections that we've put up so that nothing can come in and hurt us, quote, is the expression. Yes.
Well, we were thinking, it really isn't quite fair to make the comparison between that instinct in lower kingdom, where they have no choice. We would do absolutely the right thing, and that's why people turn to religion. Give me no choice. Tell me exactly what to do. But that isn't the way we grow in knowledge and experience. So we can't compare ourselves to that instinctive behavior. But if we want to think of the lower kingdoms like the fetus, it is developing and needs more time. And then once it is born, it needs someone to awaken the mind that's in there. So that's kind of descriptive. The adults become the teachers of that infant child. And that's exactly what we are in relation to the lower kingdoms. We have a big responsibility.
And most of us, half the time, don't even think on that level. Yes.
Well, so we're self-conscious, and the lower kingdoms look up to us. Well, who do we look up to? And if we are gods in potential, what does that mean? Who can we be like?
Well, we'll take the first part first. Who do we look up to? It's usually the one that has something more than we have. So there's that little envious thing of whether it be freedom, whether it be wealth, whether it be beauty, whether it be talent. It's all outside things. To look within, we are told, is where we will find that true light, that true light that's universal is also within us. But for most of us, as Mr. Judge once answered to someone, well, I've tried very hard what you said, this looking within, and he explains at the very beginning, it's like looking into a glove. It's dark in there. It's pitch black. We can't see anything. Yet there are hints and there are helpers in helping ways, shall we say, of learning how to see that light within, that true nature that we are. So we might start with concentration. From there, we might go to meditation and on something universal, something altruistic, something as far out as we can, so there's nothing personal we can put to it, and start thinking on those ways, and start taking some of the things that Krishna, who technically is the higher self, speaking to Arjuna, who is the material part, the lower nature, of telling him, these are the things that show you how to be. And he lists all those great attributes that each one could develop within time, but it's an effort that has to be constantly looked at. Yes.
Well, Corinthians was quoted from, you know, teachings of Buddha and Lao Tzu. Are there examples of godlike people amongst us, or have there been, or is there, you know, even though we are a look within, do we see the examples of those who have looked within and are a shining example for us to?
Well, you just mentioned there's been many. The Buddha, the Krishna, 5,000 years, over 5,000 years ago, was speaking to Arjuna, and for anyone who has studied or has even just read through the Gita, one can see that those basic teachings that he was giving to Arjuna to accept and to look for those qualities within him, because it expresses in all the ancient teachings the idea that what we're really living is not the real. It's all an illusion. And we have built it up so much from outside effects that what we call the highest is nothing compared to what the highest really is. And yet we've all had at some time, in some period of our life, maybe once, maybe twice, but we can't really say never, because we think everyone has had a touch, a time when that true self within got through, because it's an onward battle to conquer the lower nature, got through and expressed it, whether it be through art, through music, through compassion and love. There is a feeling that one gets, and once they get it, they know it's not the same as the everyday person they know. And they have this feeling of complete bliss and unity with everything in the world, everything of any type of nature, whether it be Mother Nature, every kind of mankind we have. It's all a unity. It's a feeling of togetherness. It's a feeling of compassion. Yes.
Well, besides the true elder brothers, the masters of wisdom, that we have their ideas through what others wrote down for us, we have modern examples. We have Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, who was so in tune with what was happening and needed to be fixed. He even said, just before he was assassinated, I may not be here, but the dream will go on. So we've had incredible examples. We file them away as though they couldn't mean anything to us directly. And that's what we think Theosophy tries to wake you up to, the fact this is you in potential.
And so true, even with that speech, we have never met anyone who we've talked to about it that didn't have some sense of feeling from that speech, that it pulled at one's heart. That's that type of feeling we're talking about. So we might have it just coming back from a night's rest, from a dream, a portion of a dream, that we wake up with. We might not remember the dream completely, but a feeling that we could literally just float away. That's had to come from somewhere. This physical body was lying still, but yet we went through some sort of experience and came out of it with the feeling that wasn't, almost we could say, not human. It was above human. Do you have a point?
You said before, or we were talking right now about blissful feelings. There's so many psycho-spiritual philosophy books in the library, the bookstore, that talk about attributes of the true self and define them, and what attributes of the unreal self. The unreal self is when we're all negative or depressed or not feeling so good and we don't know why. And they're wonderful guidebooks for everyday living, for your everyday thoughts, doing your everyday things. And sometimes I think personally that I'm not evolving, because every day I'm doing my same routine over and over, all those little everyday things we need to do. But then I'm thinking, you know, I can do one thing different today that I didn't do yesterday, or read three more pages in a book where I'm learning something new, or change my attitude about all the little everyday things that I do. And just to value everyday life and know that's part of our true nature, is to be in that contentment. Find everything in your everyday life that makes you feel good, and that's part of evolving, to find contentment in those things.
And
where we are now.
With contentment mm-hmm. comes stability.
Mm-hmm.
It's that idea of balance. You're no longer up and down and this and that. You're just glazing and observing. That's what we are. That higher nature within us, they tell us, is the true observer. We have just lost the connection. We can, because we have the ability to choose, to work our way back to knowing that true nature, to have that stability that you're speaking of. This way you go through situations as a learning, as gaining knowledge, as gaining wisdom. Yes?
We found the last contribution so interesting, because it reminds us about the bricklayer. You know, is he slinging mortar and stacking bricks, or is he building a hospital that's going to help to heal people for generations into the future? And his attitude toward what he does affects the other bricklayers around him and can inspire them and help them see their life in a greater light, and help them realize that they're more than just this mortal thing of clay, because they're contributing to the whole.
And that's a pleasant thought to be on, yes.
First thing I'd like to say is, look inward, thou art Buddha. We hear that quite often here. The idea of an ascension isn't that you find out that your higher self is a part of you. You find out that you are part of something greater. Mm. You cease being a drop and you become part of the ocean. You become the ocean. So that is the actual movement and the thrust that we hope our existence takes us to.
We were thinking on that same line that you said, because if we look around today versus, let's say, 100 years ago, just in communication alone, we know what's going on all over this globe. think 100 years ago, by the time some people heard about some disaster, it was long done. Now we're right on top of it. We wonder, in this whole development, in this whole time period of evolution, as they say, we're in the Kali Yuga. One of the things that we're always reminded, we think about, as bad as this is, it's the fastest it's going to be. Maybe we need a lot of pressure coming from the outside to make us find something that'll make us look inside, because of all the confusion, of all the acts of nature, who really, we are the ones that put nature into their unbalance. And that's why we see a lot of these catastrophes that are happening around the world. And yet, we're pulled together more, and we notice that there's a lot of people that are volunteering Habitat for Humanity, and just regular things of helping their neighbors. We don't normally watch that program. I forgot what it's called. I just remember the saying, move that bus. But the fact that the whole community, not just the big stores that bring all the appliances and send their workers, but the whole community gets in and helps. And when there's a catastrophe and someone does go and help these things, they all say it was an experience of a lifetime. They're feeling the unity. They're feeling the connection. They might not be able to label it, but that's what we're here for. We're here to learn to be a help to all mankind, because they say what you give with one hand, you will receive with another. Yes.
And that example of the larger scope and the previous examples of the everyday mundane duties, it's the same process. It is making sacred that which we find to do as duty, or that which we choose as a volunteer, as was described in a catastrophe. And isn't that the beginning of the path to this inward spiritual enlightenment to ourselves? Isn't that how we begin to open the channel? If we are mindfully working to the highest, to the most spiritual, to the most sacred we can in our everyday tasks and moments, isn't that the beginning of opening that realization of that inner man that was described?
It's pulling away one of the veils. But another thing that we have to remember, as mind thinkers, if we cannot physically go and be a help, thoughts are things. We can think good thoughts, unity thoughts, shall we say, to these situations. Because how anybody can watch the news at night and not be affected? Sure, we're affected with the things that happen on the streets of Philadelphia, but when we start thinking about other areas in the world, in what they call the quote third world, you cannot just sit there and not have some sort of feeling of it's not right. Well, yes, it's not right, but karmically it is right, because there will be those who will learn from it. Not necessarily those people involved, but what about all of us that can now see and know it, and maybe give us a feeling of maybe trying it in our own neighborhood, our own block, our own street, way in the back.
Well, in today's world, there's a wonderful expression: think globally, but act locally. So observe what is going on in the world, but put your energies where you are. And part of that realization is there is nothing mundane in your life, whether it's putting on your shoes or making the bed or doing the dishes. It is all part of a process of being responsible, and that's what the soul is supposed to be. So we should take joy in everything we have to do, and if we can't, Think about the person who has no hands and would give anything to be able to do the dishes. Or the person who has no legs and would give anything to have to walk to the store. We don't appreciate what we have. And that is one of the ways that karma interacts with us. What we don't appreciate in this life, we'll probably lose in the next. So we better get busy.
Yes. Yes.
It has been said that if we practice goodness, we'll achieve virtue. But if we aspire to wisdom, that will lead us to a knowledge of the higher self. So being good and doing good things, very important, but not enough.
True.
So how, in fact, do we find that wisdom in our everyday lives?
How do we find it?
What do we do with our everyday lives to find that wisdom?
Well, we think the ancient teachings and the philosophy of theosophy breaks us into a little bit more of a complexion than just body and soul. The fact to understand the human nature. What part of my human nature is thinking and acting at any one time? As it states, for most of us, we always see things how we should have done them. Being that observer, it knows what we should be doing, but because we make it interpret, shall we say, that impression and to the level that we know around us, we've brought it more to the personal level, down to the personal level. So we would think one of the basic things is of those seven principles that we're speaking of, there's a part of our nature that's eternal. There's a part of our nature that's not going to be around next time. So where do we want to put our energy and force? Something that's going to be gone and not around anymore, or something that's eternal, something that's always going to be? Maybe that's where our interest should be in building it. So learning about first who and what makes us tick, shall we say. Then understanding all of us have the same power. We're using it at different degrees. So that is a big help with that. And then, of course, the ancient teachings that speak of, as we do, about reincarnation and the law of karma. The fact that we live in a universe that follows cycles, that follows a law, that connects itself and reconnects itself by following a law. And the fact that the third fundamental principle of the basis of what's the whole reason we're here is to learn, to relearn, to continue backwards in a way, to go forward, to understand what life is all about. And if we look at the idea that life is a school and we all have our lessons to learn, some can go through a situation, no problems. Someone else goes through the situation, they are crumbled. They cannot attack it, they can't touch it, they're just letting it take over them. There's a hint. Maybe this individual has already learned the lesson, the balance, the harmony in that situation, whereas the other hasn't. And it's just like the same old idea about a habit. If you have a bad habit and you want to break it, think how long it takes you to break that habit. And then if you're lucky and you're bringing in a good habit to replace it, that's helpful. Getting rid of one habit that's bad might lead us to another habit that's bad. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes consistency to learn. Way in the back.
Perhaps it's easier to focus on the positive rather than if we observe a habit we don't like. If we work towards setting a new cause and creating something else that we can put our emphasis on, the original habit will die out, and we're following the new cause, and perhaps that's what life is all about.
And that's, in a way, a very good idea when you think about it. If we think on the positive side rather than the negative, the negative can be very personal because it's something we don't like, we don't want, we don't feel we need. Whereas the positive, it does open you up to new avenues. So a feeling and an attitude of mind and how we think, if that colors how we're going to act, then it would seem, out of the two, logically, let's go for the positive rather than the negative. I don't want to be pulled down anymore.
You know, like, as I've gotten older, I think old age is a blessing.
Yes.
I'm realizing that, you know, when I'm realizing that I'm buying into a physical dimension that leaves me empty. I've done it over and over and over. And at some point I'm realizing I'm buying into it, it's like doing a drug.
Mm-hmm.
It just leaves you empty. It's joy for, you know, people tell you need this and that, and give you pleasure for a minute or whatever. And I'm realizing that, you know, the only peace I'm going to have is just to be detach myself from it.
Mm.
You know, deal with it, but not to put that much energy into the pleasure of it, because it's not bringing me pleasure.
It's true. Detachment is something, one of the things that the teachings try to explain us how to do, because by detaching, you can actually go through it without having that ups or downs. And as you say, it's not easy. And people right now who have had everything are now starting to cut back. So we wonder sometimes, is what's happening in the world a big exam's coming? Not just the poor get poorer and the rich get richer, because now the richer are getting poorer. And for them to find out you can exist with less, it's overwhelming. And how many millionaires do we hear about now that are literally giving their money away? They're going out and they're finding places it needs to be done, and they're doing it. And there's many who we probably don't even know of, who have actually figured out, you know, you can just do so much with this money, and then, you know, what's going to happen when I'm gone? This is for that individual who lives on a one-life basis, that's fine. For someone who lives on the idea of knowing this is just one lifetime in life, in many lifetimes to come, that you see a different thing, you see a more doing something with it, something of good. So it's going to be a topsy world where everybody that was on top might be sliding down to the bottom. It'll be interesting to see how all of us pull together. And we do notice throughout the world, not just here in America, people are coming, and they're coming together.
And all of the previous discussion was set off by the question about knowledge. So going back to that for a moment, isn't that the pursuit of truth? And what we were thinking was, everything described relates to the ideas we hold to be true. And isn't that our life's work? First, we have to sift the false from the true, and we do that by every situation described, testing it. Does it fit here? It doesn't hold for this. I need to change it, be willing to detach from it, and try something else. And if it is universal, and if it does not exclude anyone or anything, and if it doesn't change over time, then we know it's true and we can hold fast to it. But that underlying set of ideas is what will create what our lives will be, and that needs to be checked at all times.
And the other thing with that connection is, we need to maybe sift through all the beliefs that we have now and sort of put them all aside and look at a philosophy that has a different outlook of life. We'll just leave the baggage in the baggage cart for the time being and look at this, and definitely testing, checking, and verifying. That's what all the great sages and masters have done in previous times. That it's tested, it's checked, and it stands on its own because it's been verified by the many. This is this, and this is that. It, again, takes time, and it is we go back to that attitude of mind. So if we could start afresh with thinking, that's very good. Yes?
Yes, I just wanted to go back to where you were speaking on going from the top to the bottom, because I'm looking at it like differently, because when we talk about going from the top to the bottom, we're talking about people that maybe have wealth that's starting to wake up and realize certain things. I just wanted to put in the mindset of actually coming from the bottom to the top, because as they're going through these things and they're starting to give and be more charitable, I think their consciousness is actually raising up. So I'd like to look at it.
Yes, and they are more aware of, you know, money is money. It's a piece of paper. There's just so much you can do with it, and there's so much you can't do with it. And I think that giving and that giving it out to help is pulling it away from the personal. It's pulling away from the selfishness that we see throughout the world. And it's broadening their scopes. So, and I think when you see one to another, now there's some program that's coming on that's going to show you these actual situations of more of them doing it. So it's like it's spreading it, it's stretching it. Other people are aware. Yes?
We heard the comment earlier from the talk, know ye not that ye are the temple of God and God. And then we heard another comment where we heard the term potential. And since then we've heard about and what came to mind was a poem by Joyce Kilmer. I think that I shall never see a poem
as lovely as
a tree. And in there it says, I don't think only God can create a tree. So we think that the basic principles which are given out here help us in putting all of our daily lives in the proper perspective and exercising a potency we don't even realize that is ours. Even as in the quote from Corinthians, it probably was a time when the disciples or members were in a despondent mood, and we can't change things. Well, no matter how good I am, I still. So we think it was a very, very good question to put the realization of who and what we truly are.
And a power too, way in the back.
We think it's important to remember you don't have to be a millionaire to give from the wealth of yourself. We all have ideas, friendliness, kindness. We can be full of joy at all times because it is a spiritual world impressed on a physical thing called the earth. We are privileged to be here and to have each other. And for every, we think HPV put it, for every flower you plant in a neighbor's garden, weeds will disappear from your own. So become impersonal about it. You're a scientist. Here's your task.
And that's what they're telling us. That's what we can honestly say. That is what a student of this philosophy is. He's testing and checking it. Yes.
Many times the idea has been presented that the importance of study, and this is a school, but we can't think of any school or class that we've been in where all the students showed up and started studying without some teacher there, someone who's gone through it already and has more knowledge than they. So it's important for us to realize in doing all this work that this is not the first time on this
right.
earth thinkers have tried to figure this out, that it's been going on literally for millions of years. And there's a wealth of knowledge and information that is our birthright, that we're entitled to. And it's out there, and all we have to be willing to do is get a hold of it now.
And you know, hit the books, as they say. And what we find fascinating for us is, at this time in our period of evolution for each one of us, we can't honestly say we have a personal teacher to teach us. We have a gathering of knowledge that goes back beyond the darkness of time that has been put down for us in black and white and in English and Spanish and French. We notice in different places they've already printed them up. There is no personal person. All we have is the written word. And if we can take from the written word and use that as our teacher, then there is no personalities involved here. No one to worship or to praise to. It's here. Study it, try it out, see how it fits. If it doesn't fit you in one area, maybe it'll fit you in another area. But the fact is, we have to do it for ourselves. We cannot expecting someone to do it for us or telling us how to do it. We're beyond the childhood age. We should go back to being that innocent child, willing to be open to things. But the fact of the matter is, no one's going to come and slap you on the shoulder and say, "You got it now. Run with it." It's something we have to work on and do way in the back.
Yeah, we've been talking about the process to go through, but we think we have to take it back a step further. And how do we know, or how do we find out, how do we come to the realization that indeed we do need to make the change? Because we think that karmically, that idea that we have to change, that what we're doing now isn't working, that is something that will be the impetus behind all the changes in the process and all. And plus, knowing that our neighbor, you know, the person that we're sitting next to on the bus, the cashier at the drugstore, whoever, that they too are also on this path, and that we're on it together, and that we have an opportunity whenever we come in contact with anybody to put a little seed, plant a little seed, and hopefully it will. So I guess we're putting two things out there.
We see what you're saying. But it, you know, it's stated, HPB had said, theosophy is for those who want it. You have to want to change. You have to want to open. We have a statement made from Robert Crosby, who was a very practical man. So here are some ideas that we could use to help us with this development. For practical purposes, if we are developing the child heart, if we are learning to love things beautiful, If we are becoming more honest and more plain and simple, if we are beginning to sense the sweet side of life, if we are getting to like our friends better and extending the circle, if we feel ourselves expanding in sympathy, if we love to work for Theosophy and do not ask position as reward, if we are not bothering too much about whether we are personal or impersonal, this traveling on the path, this is the traveling on the path, he says, of impersonality. So that's what we're really trying to do, is get away from this personal nature, our small little tight, our take those blinders off our horse head and be able to see the widest of the scope.
Real quickly, I think it was Robert Frost for thinking, I was in the woods and I came upon a path where two roads diverged and I took the one less traveled and it made all the difference.
And in a way it is, because too many people today are so busy trying to keep up with what they think they should be keeping up with, and they don't realize the beauty in the smaller part of life that is something that's really everlasting. So there is hope for all of us. We just have to want it enough and have that stick-to-itness, be able to get on that path. And no matter how many times we slip and slide, whatever the situation is, if we have the guts to get up and say, I'm going to try it again, I'll try a different way of doing it, that's tenacity. We need that to become what we really are. Class is adjourned.
Just give me the clip. What page was the thing for the personality you read, Robert Paul? It's in the letters.
Right.
Did you write down what page it was on?
No, but unless he typed this up for me.
Oh, okay.
Because I was debating between that and using from Mr. Judge's the feeling of identity. Ask her. She typed it up for me where she got it.
Sorry, the two people working on the cathedral. I was thinking it's an inspiring story, and you can't push it too far. The person who says, I'm wheeling stone, and the other person says, I'm building the cathedral. But I think there are mornings when that person who just carries stone is inspired too. And there are mornings when that person who's building a cathedral just goes to work. In real life, it isn't always like that, is it? So we don't push the story too far.
Not too far, because you have to remember, let's go back in the times when a carpenter, when they had the arts, whatever it was, a mason, where it was a trade they took pride in, and they taught their children down to take pride in whatever little thing you did and be a master of it. Because they had all these great schools for different things, you know? Not today. There's some people who don't give a damn. That's a paycheck.
Right.
That's where they are. Mm-hmm. That's their business.
Sure.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, there was a time when even the carpenter took pride in what he did, and the workmanship. When sometimes I look around old buildings, it's like, ooh, we don't have anybody today that can do this. You know?
Yeah.
If it can't be stamped out.
Prefabricated. Yeah.
We can't do it. But there were all these different traits that had all their guilds that took pride in whatever little thing. The brick maker, not even the brick layer, the guy that made the bricks took pride in his bricks.
Yeah.
We need to, as it says, I think we can do better off with less.
Be forced into it, whether we want
to. You know, and I really get the feeling with everything going on around the world, it's like, wow, there's crisis after crisis.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe we need to have. have a heavy weight thrown on us to find out just how strong or not strong we are.
On the news, you mentioned the news. This is not the kind of question. It didn't seem to me. It kind of flitted through my mind. But the news is 80 to 90% negative.
Oh,